Blog Talk Radio.
This is Elio Cobo with the Phoenix Suns, and I'm in the cave with PLR. What is up, everyone? Welcome to the Cave Show. This is PLR. Happy Tuesday to you. Thank you for joining me today. This is, like I said, the Cave Show with PLR. We have some fun stuff to get into today. We have a special guest today, the Steel Cage 98.7 Arizona Sports' very own Derek Montilla will be joining us at about 10 after. We caught up with him in baseball and some other stuff as well. You know, if he's on the phone, we're going to talk to him. A little bit of wrestling. Not wrestling. Wrestling. We're going to talk about Rival Craft video. Ain't coming out, y'all. You don't get to see it. Not yet. NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball, all that. Let's get started. Let's get it going. We are brought to you by the one and only Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located on Alma School in Chama Heights. That's 4991 South Alma School. Get in there, let them know PLR sent you. They'll take 10% off your cigar purchase. Get your locker, become a member. Your locker backs directly up to a humidor. Never worry about your sticks going bad. Sit down, relax, watch one of the many televisions they have. Watch your favorite sporting event. NBA playoffs all over the place. We will be there next week for the first round of the NFL draft. Again, that's Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, now serving beer and wine. Don't just stop in, become a club member. Let them know PLR sent you. Take 10% off your cigar purchase. Some restrictions do apply, but check it out when you get there. All calls made via the Kerry Lackey Law Line, 917-889-7828. 917-889-7828. We'll jump right into this call list. Like I said, we got Derek calling in about 6 minutes. So I want to squeeze in as many as we can. Thank you for waiting. Appreciate your patience. This is the Cave Show with PLR. Who do I have the privilege of speaking to?
Good afternoon, Paul. This is Lou once again.
Lou, what's up, buddy? How are you?
All right. Well, of course, we also got the NFL schedule that's supposed to be released tonight at 8 o'clock.
Looking forward to it.
Although the official announcement has been made, there has been rumors that they already have who's going to play in the opening game.
Well, the Patriots and the Steelers, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yep. And
although I don't know if we can count that because, you know, it hasn't been officially released yet, so anything that you know, they say, I think, you know, is still up in the air about that.
Well, the internet never lies, right?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, the Bears play the Raiders in England at Tottenham Stadium. And right now, actually, Tottenham is losing to Man City 3-2. So there's your there's your link for today for that stadium in football.
Yeah. I'm interested in you fan myself. So much for that.
It's amazing how everyone gets hyped for the schedule to come out, know who everyone is playing. And what's funny about the whole thing, we have 5 months before the first real football game is played. That's like half a year almost. But we're hyped, right?
Yeah. And you're not a betting man on the NHL playoffs, are you?
No, but if I were and I bet it on Tampa Bay, I would have been in trouble.
Yeah, that's right. That's the whole thing. How do you explain that? The best team in the regular season, and they get whooped, they get swept, just like that.
I'm going to ask you to explain because you're more of the hockey guy. How did that happen?
Well, I guess they were just so sure of themselves they think they can beat anybody. But remember this: the Blue Jackets were not actually, you know, the team they can just roll over any either, because they did have 98 points in the regular season. And even though it was only 8 seed, they still, you know, managed to hold up. So, you know, this was not a team to be taken lightly. Yeah, I think
so
maybe Tampa was just overconfident.
Yeah, could have been, definitely could have been.
It was, I think the coach said, well, we were a victim of our own success.
Which I thought was the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I'm being honest with you. How are you a victim of your own success when you get eliminated in the first round, you didn't win a game, and you got put out 7-3 in a deciding game? To me, you aren't a product of your own success. So what he's saying to me, and Louie, like I said, you know more hockey than me, and you probably know these teams better than I do. But what it sounds like to me, as he just said, was I allow my players to read their own press clippings about the regular season. And then we turned around and got our asses added to us.
Yeah.
I don't think that's good coaching.
No, it isn't.
So
I mean, nobody saw that coming. Nobody even saw it coming.
No. And you know what? I imagine it's like any other sport. And when it's 1-0, you go, no big deal. When it's 2-0, you're thinking, okay, let's get this. But then when it goes 3-0, you're like, crap, everything with you is getting tighter. And for the opposing team, they're thinking, oh, we can't miss now. All the pressure's on them. And it seems like that's really what ended up happening.
Yeah, the Islanders swept the Penguins, too. I thought it was going to be more of a series. I thought that was going to go at least 6. And then the Islanders just took it from there.
More than any sport, it really seems like, and what's cool is I'm talking more hockey than I've talked in almost a year, but I want you to tell me, in hockey, is it just me, or does it seem like home ice isn't as big of a deal as it is in
not at all. Not at all.
Being in every other sport?
Home advantage in hockey means absolutely nothing.
Okay. Yeah, I see it in baseball just because you played to your part the whole season, so now you're making someone come and play to your part. In football, it could be a weather thing. In basketball, it could be a noise thing. But in hockey, it really just doesn't seem like it's as important as it is in other sports.
No, because I've seen, you know, teams at home ice, and someone stumble in it. Rangers did, Devils did. But, you know, not even winning a game in the series on your home ice. I mean, I'm just baffled by it. How could this happen? Best team in the league, and they become the biggest choke artists.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it happens. Hey, real. I want to ask you one more quick question before Derek gets on. Before he calls, So I'm not surprised if the Yankees beat the Red Sox, just like I wouldn't be surprised if the Red Sox beat the Yankees. My surprise is they really played a game that only lasted 2.5 hours.
That is surprising. That's not typical Yankees-Red Sox gameplay.
That's like 2.5 hours. That's usually an inning for these two teams.
Yeah, or two.
Exactly. But hey, look, my friend, tomorrow is the last show of the week. We're definitely not going to be on Good Friday. But I have Derek calling in, and I hope to speak to you before the 3-day weekend tomorrow.
All right, thanks.
All right, buddy. Good to hear from you. Good friend of the program, Lou. Always good to catch up and hear what's on his mind. Up next, though, my man here, Derek and I have been in this pretty much since the start. He's doing big things as usual. He's over at Arizona Sports, AZ Sports. He is the man over there, knows so much about baseball, it's ridiculous, so I got to definitely pick his brain. And, of course, he probably knows more about wrestling than Vince McMahon himself. He's Mr. Man with the Steel Cage. My friend, my brother, welcome to the Cave Show with PLR on the Kerry Lackey Law Line. What's up, my man? How you doing today?
Good, man. I can't live up to that introduction. What are you doing? You gotta undersell when I'm on so I can at least try to impress people. But thank you so much.
You're paying for a wedding, Derek. I got to make sure I buddy you up a little bit. So
no, that makes sense. Actually, that makes a lot of sense. So.
So, I mean, why am I going to be mean? The guy is going to be paying for everything except my tuxedo.
I know. You're like, I gotta treat you good so you get all the accoutrements that I want for my meal. That's all I'm concerned about.
Yeah. Can you believe, though, all kidding aside, I put that picture up on Facebook of our kids. Isn't it hard to believe that was 4 years ago, though?
It's very hard to believe. It's very hard to believe. Time passes very quickly, and sometimes we don't notice it because everything stays the status quo, like for us as adults. And, yeah, to see the kids and how fast they grow in that time, it's pretty wild, you know. But I felt that way about my daughter in general. She didn't know how to ride a bicycle for most of last year. And then right around the fall, once she started seeing other kids out riding their bikes, it's amazing how quickly she not only wanted to be on her bike, but learned to ride it. And then within like a week, she's doing the later dad thing and going out the door, grabbing her bike and going out with her friends. And yeah, that period of time, that all happened way too fast.
I can't wait to see you while she's riding that bike, hiding in a bush with a hat pulled down and sunglasses, making sure that you have your eye on her at all times.
Yeah, no, I'm just out there. I'm out in the street yelling. I'm not hiding at all. I'm just out there. What are you doing? Who's that? What's your name? What grade are you in? Yeah, you're too old to be hanging out with my daughter, Scram. You know, that kind of thing. But it is what it is.
Do bullets hurt you? Does it hurt when bullets hurt? Are you Superman? Oh, I'm just asking.
Just questions. Yeah, someone call them threats. I call them questions.
Yo, man, let's jump into it. So, on the show about a week ago, this is a name drop. I had Greg Moore on from the Republic, and we were talking about the Diamondbacks. And you know, a lot of people are still disappointed with Goldie leaving and Corbin leaving. And to some degree, a little bit with Pollock leaving. But I said to him, this team kind of reminds me of that Suns team from 4 years ago, 5 years ago now, that almost made the playoffs. Everyone just had a magnificent year at the same time. Everyone was playing to prove something. Everyone was trying to shut everybody up. And this team, this Diamondback team, kind of reminds me of that because you got Adam Jones playing on really a cut-rate contract. You have Marte trying to prove to people that he is an everyday player. You put him out there, he's going to ball out. You have Zach Greinke getting tired of people saying he's overpaid. And I think this is a team that can actually contend for the playoffs just based on the fact they're all pissed off that they're being written off.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a very good way to look at it. I think what you said fits their entire persona as a team. I felt like when Troy Lovullo during spring training, he referenced that this team was going to play with an attitude with a chip on their shoulder. But he said it was going to be like, you know, the snot-nosed little brother that doesn't get any respect. That's what a lot of these guys are angling on, but it's not just lip service. It's not just a motto. It's not a mindset that Lavolo is trying to instill in them. When you look at their individual journeys, so many of the players on this team have had that journey. They are at a point in their career where they have been written off. You look at Merrill Kelly. You look at what Robbie Ray was supposed to be in Detroit and then never was, but everything he's done here. Like you said, Zach Greinke and his journey and the fact that people have not only said he's overpaid, but over the hill. You look at David Peralta and his particular journey, where he came from, the fact that he was a pitcher that converted to an outfielder and now is having the success that he's having. Peralta is easily a leader not only on the field, off the field, but he's one of those guys that wants that. You know, there's something that's different about him that has been there about the guys that were leading the way before. Goldschmidt, even when you go back, you know, in the day to other players with Justin Upton, they were always reluctant leaders. You know, we've always heard that Goldschmidt and like Zach Greinke are different in team meetings and such versus what we as the media get to see out of them. But it's a whole other thing for your team leader, for the person that's kind of not only leading the charge with his performance, but also kind of putting the team on his back a bit and taking that responsibility, wants it like David Peralta does. It's different. And I don't know if he's the team leader per se. I do know that there's a lot of talk about Archie being a vocal leader as well. For me, it's more of what I've seen from them. And it also is a leading by example thing. David Peralta is that guy right now that you're talking about that really just wants to shut people up and show them that, despite the fact that three of the biggest names on this team are gone, this team isn't going to all of a sudden fall apart. No offense to Paul Goldschmidt, but Paul Goldschmidt has lacked a clutch ability in his time with this team. He was so good at times, but then there were other times where you just couldn't count on him. And a lot of times that couldn't count on him was, you know, when they were down by a run late in the game, you know, and you're expecting this big miraculous Goldschmidt home run that happened earlier in his time with Arizona, but wasn't happening over the last few seasons. And now you look at what Goldschmidt's doing with the St. Louis Cardinals, and no offense to him, but his batting average is mediocre. And really, if he isn't hitting a home run, he's not really getting on base or doing much else. I think he has one extra base hit outside of the 7 home runs he has and a sub 250 batting average. He'll probably come around and tear it up for, you know, 3 consecutive weeks and go off to like 350 or something. But that's what Goldschmidt was. He was a streaky hitter and he wasn't, he was great. He was a great guy. It was great to have him on this team, but I don't think he's the caliber of player that changes a franchise like people think of him as. He's just much like a lot of players on this team. He was an underdog. He was somebody that people counted out and that turned around to be a multi-year all-star player. He was an amazing athlete. He's just not the piece to change your franchise. And I don't think losing him is going to now suddenly, you know, show that you're going to see the D-backs go into the spiral where they, you know, lose 100-plus games. Do I think that they're going to be better without him this season? It remains to be seen. I think what they're doing right now is probably a good sample size and average of what we'll probably see out of them this entire season. I wouldn't be surprised to see them finish around 80 games, you know, 80 wins, but still impressive with the fact that they were in it at times and fought and will have good series and will continue to be competitive. We'll still be a fun team to watch, but just I don't think in the long run we'll have enough to compete with, you know, some of these teams.
I think a lot of it has to do also with Jeremy Lamb or Jake Lamb, excuse me. And while I'm thinking basketball with Jake Lamb and if he's healthy, and I'm asking this from a different point of view, if Lamb proves that he cannot stay healthy for this season and they're getting the play that they want out of other guys, does he become someone that they possibly sell off? And I know I'm way ahead of myself with this question, but could he be a player that they move? Because it seems like they're getting rid of guys that are old, injured, or want too much money. And he kind of seems to fit in a couple of those.
I'll say this with Jake Lamb is he is a player the franchise loves, but I don't think the franchise is attached to anybody at this point. It comes down to situations and circumstance. The reason why A.J. Pollock wasn't going to get the money from the D-backs that he was looking for was because the Diamondbacks knew that he wasn't worth that money. They know that there's a lot of players that you can plug in and play and have give you a close to that same effort for a much, you know, for vastly different salaries. Right now, the Diamondbacks are still in a phase of trying to get out of the shadow of past regimes, past contracts, past managerial decisions, a lot of things that went into kind of causing this team problems. A lot of the reasons why they weren't able to keep Paul Goldschmidt is because of these decisions, because of some of these contracts. They knew Goldschmidt was going to get his money at the end of this season. And so they wanted to do what they could to get something significant in return and not just let him walk the way they did with Corbin last season. They just didn't have a choice there when it came to Pollock and Corbin because they were too good at times last season in order to trade them. You would have looked crazy trading your best pitcher in the rotation when you're first in the division just because you know that that guy is going to leave at the end of the season. You know, but unfortunately, they put themselves in that position where they were too good to trade these guys and get something for them and build for their future. But they knew both Corbin and Pollock weren't going to stay, and they knew they weren't going to pay them the money that they were looking for. Same thing with Goldschmidt. They just did it a season ahead of time. It's heartbreaking.
True.
It lost a lot of fan support. And just like the, you know, just like getting out of those contracts, getting out of Yasmani Tomas's contract, getting out of some of the big money deals that they did in the past that didn't really work out or, you know, haven't really brought the success to this team that they thought they would. They're doing what they can. And they've done a good job. I think that they've done a good job. Like you said, Adam Jones is fantastic. Honestly, he's fantastic. Way better of an outfielder than a lot of people give him credit for, considering the runs he's saved already this season. And he's been one of their best players at the plate. You know, he was absolute steal. He was a bargain basement steal when it came to his contract and what they got him for. Not only that, but he's an amazing person to talk to. He's one of the best people in the locker room to talk to.
And he stays healthy, unlike A.J. Pollock. A.J. Pollock is hurt all the time. On the Kerry Lackey Law Line here on the Cave Show with PLR, AZ Sports' very own, still Cave's very own, Derek Montilla.
Captain Caveman. Captain Caveman with a K. No, let me get back to Jake Lamb really fast, though, because I just wanted to say, I don't think Jake Lamb, to me, when you look at the fact that they were able to part ways with the three players that they parted ways with this offseason, I can't see Jake Lamb having done enough for them to keep him around. You know what I mean? Like, when it really comes down to it, what they're getting out of Christian Walker, what they're getting out of Eduardo Escobar right now, what they're getting out of their infield is consistent play, which is something that they couldn't get out of Jake Lamb. And unfortunately, Jake Lamb, I mean, this is kind of how it happens in sports. An opportunity presents itself due to injury or some other situation. Somebody else steps up and proves that they can do as good, if not a better, a job as that person. And now that person's job is in risk. I don't think that they're deep enough right now to even consider, you know, getting rid of Jake Lamb. They have a real problem with depth. But they keep pulling, you know, solid players up out of nowhere. You know, Tim LeCastro came up and has been delivering, one of the fastest guys on the team, and, you know, just doing a good job in spots where they put him in, where they need him. It just comes down to, I don't think that they're going to get rid of Jake Lamb based on the fact that they need capable players. They're going to run too thin here before too long.
Yeah. It's obvious on this team. Anybody can get Wally pipped at any time.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you one more baseball question. And it's kind of unfair the way I'm going to phrase this, and it's going to make it seem like I like one team better than the other. I really don't. I can understand why the Yankees are 7-9 because it seems like everybody but their manager has been injured this year. But everybody in Boston seems healthy. Should the Red Sox be worrying? And if Chris Sale isn't getting the ball over the plate now, we know he's going to be injured come August because Chris Sale is always injured come August. Should Boston be worried about where they are right now and where they could possibly go?
Should they be? They're terrified right now. They are absolutely worried. That's why they're making moves already, like DFAing Swihart and some of the things that they're doing. I don't really know what's wrong with them other than this is a classic example of what happens to teams in baseball. You can't even say that about other sports because other sports, their off season of a champion comes and goes, and next thing you know, they're ready. But I feel like in sports, it just becomes a thing of a lack of focus and a lack of desire because you've already done the thing that you were trying so hard to do. I also think success came really easy to them last season. And I don't follow them close enough to really know the ins and outs of what's going on individually with them. It's very surprising. I think that they're being very reactionary very early in the season. And I think that's why I really see panic out of them. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes you just can't expect in baseball for a team to be good, like championship level good year in and year out. It just doesn't seem to happen. Teams just go on a streak. Something happened. They got on a roll. Confidence was high. It's just such a mental sport. It's not like any other sport where you can just be big and strong and good at what you do. And, you know, your ankle feels better. So you can run faster now and you can, you know, jump higher and do things like that. Baseball is like, I don't know. Don't know. Last week I was hitting .462 and now this week I'm hitting .167 and I'm .062 with runners in scoring position. It doesn't make any sense sometimes, and that's the reason why. It's like golf. It's such an anomaly sometimes. No matter how good you are, the mental game side of baseball can always, you know, ruin things for you. So, you run into a series, you get kind of clobbered. And, I mean, to be honest, this is where I credit the Diamondbacks for being able to kind of bounce back from, you know, losing a game by 18 runs or whatever to the Dodgers and then coming back and being competitive the next day. It's not something easy. You get knocked that hard on your butt right away and it's easy to lose confidence. It's easy for a lot of things to start derailing, you know, and maybe that's what's gone on with the Red Sox. I don't really know. I know that they've had some injuries. I know that they've had some things, but, you know, their pitching staff at one time was in the discussion for who is going to have the best pitching staff this season, and I think their ERA is just under a million right now. So, the Diamondbacks, honestly, the only game that they gave the Diamondbacks a hard time offensively was a game where they did a bullpen start and basically didn't let the D-backs lineup see, you know, a pitcher more than once. You know, I think the starter went three innings and then everybody else was one. And that was a 1-0 game that Merrill Kelly pitched an absolute gem. So it was like game was like was them panicking and kind of doing everything they can to kind of scrape out a win before they left, you know, Chase Field.
Yeah, and Adam Jones came really close to bringing that home run back in the park that game too. Hey,
do not ask him about that. He will tell you he missed it, and then he'll tell you go watch the replay, and then he'll criticize how bad the replays are.
Yep. So I'm not gonna have you here without asking you a couple of wrestling questions. So,
All right, we can do that.
So we had the big pay-per-view. I never thought I'd see the day where a women's match would headline a pay-per-view. And I guess I could say the same thing about MMA. I never thought I'd see the day. But has Ronda Rousey, in her short time of being in the WWE, lifted it to the point where she can lose that match and – that's probably the best thing that could have happened for the women in the sport because it's going to make you want to almost have them be the headline match again to see what happens.
I don't know. Wrestling is different. I think that a lot of this had more to do with the popularity of Becky Lynch rather than Ronda Rousey. I think that Ronda Rousey helped. She was at WrestleMania this year. She was the household name. She was that, you know, that big star level. But the difference is they brought her in months and months ahead of time, had her already be part of the show, had her be a regular, you know, person on Raw who eventually became champion. So she was like a hybrid between, you know, bringing in a celebrity for WrestleMania and also having somebody, you know, switch sports and come over. I think she helped, but I also think that we are just at a time right now where, you know, women's wrestling has reached a level of respect far beyond what we ever thought it would. And it's at a point where it's, you know, where we dreamt it could be. You know, I say that because I was a guy who at one point was watching, you know, WWE put on bra and panty matches and basically had every one of their women out there be eye candy for, you know, their 18 to 34 year old male audience. The world has changed a lot, and it's changed for the better. I think that, you know, the main event thing, they're riding high on, you know, a lot of things that they've done correctly over the last year. I think UFC had a big impact on it. I think that there were a couple of factors in there that just kind of led them to realize that this was the time to put this match in the main event. But honestly, I give credit to the fans. The fans wanted this match as the main event. So kind of the fan pressure on WWE to make it the main event led in that direction. I'm not sure if that was the plan the entire time. I'm not sure if they really wanted to wait and see how things would go. But, you know, we've slowly worked our way there. We've had episodes of Raw and SmackDown where the main event was a women's match. Made brief history where people were excited about it, and then it was just normal. It just became normal. Yeah. So, like, the next time they did it, people weren't all geeking out about the fact that a women's match was the main event. We were just like, cool, we're here. We've arrived at this point where this can happen. It doesn't have to be every week, but it can be, you know, maybe every two or three episodes, there's a women's match as the main event. It worked its way up to be their biggest show of the year. And I mean, honestly, there's times where they've been a bit transparent about it, like any other corporation would. They definitely run things based on the fact that they're trying to, like, they're behind the curve instead of being ahead of the curve in more than one way. But and I think it was CM Punk that said that. They're always doing things after the fact instead of trying to be the ones out at the forefront making history, you know. So the big difference there is they're the biggest. They get the most attention. They're the biggest, you know, wrestling company in the world. And when they do things, it's going to get the attention. Whereas, like, if a smaller company, you know, has their biggest show feature a women's match, like Lucha Underground had a woman be their heavyweight champion, you know, a number of years ago. She's a terrible person, and there's no real reason to give her credit for that. But Lucha Underground itself gets a lot of credit for kind of being the first when it came to, you know, women truly being equals in, like, a wrestling ring kind of thing. And you know, it got a positive reception. People, you know, were accepting of it and were on board with the fact that a woman became, you know, like, the heavyweight champion. So it opened doors and allowed WWE to see that kind of stuff. But I think more of it had probably to do with the mainstream appeal of Ronda Rousey and the fact that, you know, wrestling fans were already invested in what was going on with the women. And there wasn't another name on the card that people were going to tune into necessarily to see if they weren't a wrestling fan, you know? So there were a lot of, I think, perfect factors that came together to make the women, you know, main event. But in the long run, it was definitely the right decision. I'm glad they did it. And I'm glad that they can, you know, kind of just go on and, you know, make this a normal part of the show instead of, you know, it constantly being history when they do it.
Captain Caveman, Derek Montilla, AZ Sports Steel Cage on. Derek, we're coming up against time, but I got two quick questions before I get you out of here. One,
all right.
I know we said there's something that you said last wrestling question, and then one more after that. You said that things have changed, times have changed, it's come so far. But when I look at this and I see Kofi Kingston, the WWE champ, why is it such a big deal? And why is it so odd to have a black champion? The last one I remember before that was The Rock. And, yeah, they've come a long ways with the women and, you know, with steroids and watching for that and banning this. Why is it such an oddity to have a black guy be their champion?
I mean, I guess my only answer is good old fashioned racism. I don't know, because it's not like they haven't had capable performers in the past who easily could have been a champion. It's not like they couldn't have done this with Kofi, 8 years ago or however long years ago when he got in an amazing feud with Randy Orton at the time and ruined his car. There was all sorts of times. I mean, really what it comes down to is the perception of WWE is that they don't value black performers and they don't put them, you know, on an equal level as performers of other color. It's mind boggling to think that literally when you look at the WWE heavyweight championship lineage, that The Rock is the only black champion. You know, that's wild. It's not to say that there hasn't been other black champions within WWF or WWE or WCW, but we're talking about their main championship. And you look at its lineage, basically The Rock. You know, I think Kofi is different. I think Kofi is amazing for a number of reasons. I mean, part of it is the fact that he's been around for so long. So it's so satisfying to see anybody that's been with the company for 11 years get a championship. That's amazing. It also has to do with the fact that he was kind of relegated into this buddy friends group in the New Day that everybody loves and is so entertaining to both adults and children, but really isn't seen as like a competitive threat. They're just, you know, kind of the funny, you know, black guys who like unicorns and rainbows and throw pancakes out, you know? And so there's just a lot of things there that you felt like were, you know, were just, it's just such a, it's a good story to see someone who was, you know, in that position get the opportunity that Kofi did. So Kofi's story, in my opinion, is amazing without the fact of him being black, you know what I mean? Without that factor. But then you factor in that it's not only just such a feel good thing for people, but it does lead you to that question. Like why hasn't this been the case in the past? I mean, you know, I don't really know the answer to it. I think that there's been times where there were so many people, you know, one of our favorite dudes was Ahmed Johnson, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I can't really answer it. I mean, we it's to a point now where, you know, it's been too long and there's been too many people that have accused WWE of kind of holding down black performers or not elevating them on the same way that they would someone else of a different skin color. So they had to eventually address it and do something about it. I just, again, I hope it's like the women's thing where I hope we see more black champions. I hope we see this just kind of be a thing where we appreciate Kofi and we appreciate The Rock, but then we get back down to a point where we don't even know how many there have been. You can't count it on one hand because there have been, you know, enough people of color that were champion that you're not sitting there going, yep, I know the two in their history, you know, in their 40, 50 year history that have been champion.
Last question. Next Thursday, the number one pick, the Arizona Cardinals, and with the number one selection, the Arizona Cardinals select
Kyler Murray, quarterback, right. Oklahoma University.
Just wanted your opinion on that. Oh, by the way, next week, I'll make sure I tell him you said hello, but coming on to discuss these NBA playoffs, the champ, Chucky Booker.
Don't tell me it's Chucky. Don't tell me it's Chucky. No. No. Right, let me guess who he's going to pick to win the championship. Let me guess who his selection to win the championship is this season.
I'm ready, and I'm going to tell him this when he's on next week. So you have him picking who?
I know this is crazy, but the Houston Rockets. It's wild, right?
I'm gonna find out.
Tell him 11-year-old Derek still hates him. No, wait. No, I've been 14. 14-year-old Derek. 14-year-old Derek.
All right, bro.
38-year-old hey, Derek, man. Loves him and misses him, though.
Yo, man, I appreciate you. You know that.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for having me on, man.
Hey, tell the family I said what's up, please.
I will. You tell your boy to stop calling me.
And please tell your pops to continue to bug the hell out of you. I love that.
I will, man. Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. That's my man there, the one, the only, Derek Montilla. A lot of you should remember when back in the beginning of the Sports Cave, the Cave Show, all that stuff, Derek was right there. He hopped on, I want to say, 3 months in. So he's not just, you know, the superstar that he's become, but he's always family with us. So always good to get him on, get his thoughts on everything. Like I said, only one more show for the week. We are going to be off Friday. Tomorrow we have scheduled Richard Science, Fox 10 Sports, scheduled to come on and talk with us about all the good stuff that's happening. You heard Derek say who he picked. He's going with He's going with Kyler Murray for the Arizona, excuse me, Cardinals in their first round pick. Quickly, I want to touch on basketball. I want to touch on NBA playoffs yesterday. I love the fact that everyone's just counting Denver out. And I think they're crazy. I really do. I think they're crazy to just count Denver out. Denver is the most talented, is the more talented team than San Antonio. Yeah, they had to come back. See, here's what everyone is saying. Well, San Antonio, their experience, they got Pop. They got experience with LaMarcus. They got experience with DeMar. Denver only has experience with Paul Millsap. Patty Mills over on San Antonio, he has experience. This guy has experience. Denver's a better team. And for the first time, like about midway through the third quarter, I want to say with 7 minutes left, I think that's when Denver realized we need to stop feeling like this is a playoff game and just think this is a basketball game. Let's go out and let's win this game. And I think that's what they did. And I loved Malone, Coach Malone, for sticking with Jamal Murray. Remember, Malone had a great relationship with Boogie Cousins, and Sacramento let him go. His guys are his guys. Nikola Jokic is a baller. And I'm glad these playoffs are here for him to show you he's a baller. The playoffs aren't too big for him. I can tell you that right now. The playoffs are not too big for him. Why the hell is Oklahoma City still shooting threes? Drive. You're not a three-point shooting team. Do what you do. Get to the rim. And could Portland be better with Enes Kanter? Just because he'll get you offensive rebounds. He'll get you put back. Defense is terrible. But how much defense in this round do you really have to play on Steven Adams? So, Portland might. I know I picked Oklahoma City, but after watching this, Oklahoma City looks like they're a five-game loser. And then that's when you start getting the naysayers on Russell Westbrook again. He's not good enough. He doesn't make other people good enough. He doesn't do this. He doesn't do that. And that's when you get the people from, you know, FS1. I don't want to mention Colin Cowherd. He gets into talking about how bad he is, and everyone knows he's not. Excuse me. Apologize. Tried to hit the mute button. And then Toronto and Orlando. Orlando got their one. That's all I'm going to say. Tonight, in a series that no one really wants to watch, Milwaukee beats Detroit. Honestly, I think if this was wrestling, Detroit would tap out now, and let's just have it be over with. Houston's going to beat Utah, and Boston's going to beat Indiana. Just a matter of time. Like I said, tomorrow, scheduled to call in Rick Stein's Fox 10 Sports. Thank you, Derek Montilla, Bill Cage, AV Sports, Captain Caveman himself. Thank you for calling in today. Callers, thank you for calling in. All calls in online. Make sure you're following us at Sports Cave on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook fan page, SportsCave.com. All caves are with the K. And you can follow me on the Twitter directly. ELR on sports. Until tomorrow, everyone, enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Tomorrow is our Friday. Look forward to talking to you all again. Until then, this has been The Cave Show. PLR, this is PLR. Oh, and shout out to our newest teammate, Nancy D'Antonio. Until tomorrow, have a great night. This is PLR. This is The Cave Show.